We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics. Here's your host, Todd McKim.
Hi, everybody. Todd McKim. Welcome to another edition of Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics. A little bit later on, we'll talk volleyball. What a terrific start for Sam Crosson and his troops. They're 17-1, 7-1 in league play, moving up the national rankings. And we'll talk to the national player of the week in the second segment. The Bears will be down in Southern California against USC and UCLA this week. But we're going to start first and foremost with head coach Justin Wilcox. The Bears at Utah this week. We will be on the air with a pregame show beginning at 6 o'clock Pacific time, a 7:15 Pacific time start. The Bears against a really good Utah squad. But first, we see this each and every week. Trick plays, we'll call them trick plays, alumni plays, whatever you want to call them. And, you know, some of them work, some of them don't work. But the idea of having a trick play, I mean, how many of those do you have in like, the bag? And then how do you decide when to use things like that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And we have a role that we keep of our own, and then also, ones that we see on tape. And we practice them periodically in fall camp and during the week of practice if we think something could be there. And then when and where is always the key, right? And they can obviously create some deception and create a big play, or sometimes when they don't go well, it can put you back a little bit. So a lot of times you see them around kind of that midfield to high red zone area. A lot of teams kind of will lean on them there. You know, the more you get closer to the end zone, you see more and more of that. But I think it's a fine line, and you're also looking at downs, certain down and distances where you feel like, you have what people like to call a waist down. And for us, we always debate that. That's a gray area because every down is so, so critical, and you're trying to move the ball and also keep the other team off balance. So it's gray area for sure.
Yeah, and the reason I mentioned that this week, Washington and Oregon played, and the Huskies tried one to start the game, and it looked like it was successful for a big gain on a kickoff, but they called it back because apparently, according to the officials, it didn't meet the specs of what was legal and what was not. So it's always an interesting dynamic. The other thing that you guys do, and we've talked about this before off mic, is that each and every week you have a collection of plays to help teach your team what can and can't be done, and whether it's a gimmick play or if it's something else that's unusual, maybe help accentuate the rules and so forth. Where did this idea come from, and how many plays you kind of put together on a given week?
Yeah, we do it in fall camp, and we'll do it really each night. We call it Football 101, and we'll take, all different types of plays. One example would be pylon plays and plays that are made at the pylon and what are the rules. And, where guys sometimes will reach and fumble the ball through the end zone, and that's a touchback where if you know the rules, you would actually just want to touch the ball on the pylon, a la Evan Weaver last year against Washington. Another one, for example, we talk about the kicking game and the returns on kickoff return. And we had one come up last year against in the bowl game where they kicked the ball short of the goal line. We couldn't fair catch it, but it was right next to the sideline, and Ashton Davis went over, put himself out of bounds, and then touched the ball. and that is a penalty on the kick team. So you go through all these different scenarios. Sometimes it's 2 minute, sometimes it's 4 minute, sometimes it's a special teams play. But we have a huge reel that we go through. Sometimes it's targeting and things like that that are emphasis. But we have a huge reel, and we do it in fall camp, and then we do it every Thursday. We'll take plays from throughout the country that we can teach off of, just, and we call it Football 101. And they're not, you know, necessarily a certain route, but it's more of a rule or how people are implementing something, and so we can teach our guys to, you know, make one play in the game that could be the difference because they know the rules or know how it's officiated a little bit better.
Yeah, in the bowl game, that was people were saying, what in the world is he doing there touching the ball so close to the goal line? But being out of bounds, he's out of bounds, so he's not part of the play. He's out of the play, and so the ball ended up being out at the 25-yard line. So it's little things like that that can make a difference in a football game, no question about it. And it's a good idea to have those things. All right, the Oregon State didn't go as planned. It was a tight game. We knew it was going to kind of be like that. They've got some talented people offensively with Jake Luton. The wide receiver is really good as well, Hodgins. And it came down to, as a lot of these close games do, making a play or two in the fourth quarter. And they were able to convert on a third and long at one point near midfield. It kind of kept a drive alive. They took the lead. And then your team had a couple of chances. But, you know, Devon Monster couldn't finish the football game. You had to put Spencer Brash in. And it was one of those situations where, all right, first opportunity for a true freshman to come in the game. You can just imagine what's going through his mind. Oregon State's been getting after the quarterback really good. And his first throw is like, my gosh, there's no way this guy's a freshman. And then a couple of plays later, you're saying, oh, yeah, he's a freshman. And that's kind of the way it is with freshmen. So it was a tough situation for him to come into, but it's a learning experience for him as well.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And we, yeah, that's an extremely difficult situation. Really not even, you know, I don't know what's fair, but it's not necessarily maybe fair to a guy like that. But we think Spence's got a really bright future. We'll see where it goes this week, kind of depending on the health of Devon Monster. More importantly, we got to play better around that position. Now, the quarterback position has to play better. We all know that, and they do as well. But we got to protect better, and that's the O-line, the running backs. We have to run the ball more efficiently, and again, with blocking, whether it's O-line, tight ends, backs hitting the hole the right way, QBs on poles, and then in the pass game, we just got to operate better there. I mean, we just left way too many plays out on the field, and you know, I really like our team and the guys on the team, but we have to perform better. And we got some guys in there who haven't played a ton, but you know, there's no excuse. That's part of the game, and we have to go out and perform better because that wasn't acceptable.
I know the punting, it was nice to see Steven back in there. Did a pretty good job, I thought, for having not played in every game this year based on a little bit of discomfort that he's been having. Got a decent punt return with Nico. And against the team that you're going to face this week, Utah, year in, year out, they might be the best special teams group in the conference, maybe the country even.
Yeah, they're very, very good. You know, they got skill at the kicking and punting positions. They do a great job in their coverage units. They're a really big physical team. They're as physical as anybody in the conference for sure. And they do a really nice job with their schematics. They know what they're doing, and they got some really good players doing it.
They do, and they have for quite some time. It's been a slow but steady build for Utah since they joined the Pac-12 conference. I remember talking to Tyrone, Kyle, when they first came into the league, and he said, we know we're not there yet, depth-wise, speed-wise, those kinds of things, but each and every year they've gotten a little bit better, and last year they were one of the better teams in the conference, and this year, even though they don't have the lead in the conference, technically, because they lost to USC, so USC has the tiebreaker. This is a team that's as good as anybody around. And you mentioned the physical nature of things. It starts at the line of scrimmage. Their defensive line, they may have three or four pros. Yeah. I mean, they may be old enough to be pros as well. And then the offensive line's the same way.
Yeah, that's noticeable right as you put the tape on. Defensively, their front is extremely physical. They're big, strong guys, mature guys. They got an edge defender, number six, who is an excellent Bradley Anai, who's an excellent player. Their linebackers are very, very good. And they play aggressive in coverage. And as you mentioned, their skill players are talented, very talented. I mean, they play man coverage as well as anybody in our conference. Got a ton of respect for them. And then you go on the offense and you look at the linemen and you know, the movement they're getting on people and their scheme. They do a really nice job with scheme. Andy Ludwig does a great job, and they got a really talented back. Quarterback's doing an excellent job. He's a threat to run the ball, and then there's guys making plays at receiver. So, you know, they have a complete football team. It's going to be a great challenge for us, and, you know, I know our guys are excited to play them, and we're going to have to play a much better game than we did last week.
Yeah, you mentioned the running back, Zach Moss, who ironically was the running back that carried the ball on the final play of the game against the Bears 3 years ago here at Memorial Stadium, where the Bears upset the nationally ranked Utes. It came down to a one play to win it or lose it, and Looney made the tackle on Moss, of all people, behind the line of scrimmage, and the Bears won that football game. And he's already established himself as the all-time leader in the history of Utah football in rushing the football. He surpassed that mark last week against Arizona State. You mentioned the quarterback, Huntley, who, and we're not sure if he's going to play this week. He got banged up a little bit against Arizona State. Here's a guy that when he first came into the league, he was kind of a runner only. And then under 2 years with Troy Taylor, former Cal quarterback, was the offensive coordinator at Utah, now the head coach at Sacramento State. And by the way, congratulations to the start that they've had so far this year, upsetting a couple of nationally ranked teams in their division. But this guy, he doesn't throw picks. I mean, he's good with the football, and that running component, a little bit like the Jadon Daniels at Arizona State, the ability to flush out and make plays.
Yeah, no doubt about it, and he has. I mean, he's, you watch him throw the football in the last couple of years and the growth he's made there. Very talented guy, and when, you know, people might have things covered and he can take off and run it, whether it's a scramble or a design quarterback run, which adds another element. That's why people do it, because the math on defense changes. And now if you don't have a guy for the quarterback on every play, then we got to get off of blocks and rally to the ball. And if you designate somebody for the quarterback every play, well, then you're in zero everywhere. So it just comes down to math, and our guys are going to have a great challenge, not only with the quarterback, but the line and the running back. And I know our guys will be excited to play because what type of team we're going up against.
Well, a great opportunity this week against a nationally ranked opponent on the road. Tough environment, but it looks like we will not have snow. So let's start off with the positive. The weather should be decent for this football game. Coach, we appreciate it, and we'll talk to you prior to the ball game on Saturday.
Thanks. Go Bears.
Head coach Justin Wilcox. A reminder, a couple of weeks, Bears back home against the Cougars of Washington State, led by head coach Mike Leach, and another outstanding offense. So make sure you get to the game early and enjoy the Bears against the Washington State Cougars a little over a week here at Memorial Stadium. Joining me now is the National Volleyball Player of the Week, representing the Cal Bears, who have only one loss, one of only three teams in the country that has one loss or less, moving up the national rankings, sitting atop the conference standings, tied with the Stanford Cardinal, is Mima Mirković. I got that right, didn't I? That's the Serbian pronunciation, because you were actually born in Serbia, but yeah. Your bio says you're from Irvine. You're basically a Southern California girl in that regard. Let's talk, first of all, just having that Serbian heritage, and but living most of your life in Southern California in the Irvine area.
So what do you want me to say about it?
Well, tell us a little bit about your Serbian culture. Your parents are from Serbia. You were actually born there. So how much of an influence is that Serbian culture, and has it been in your life?
There is definitely intensity and passion running through our veins. Every Serbian can attest to that. So I think just growing up, it was a lot of like never settling for less than what's the best, and just always going out and taking what you want instead of expecting things to be given to you. And there's always that kind of competitive nature, even when we get into arguments in the household. It's like, no, I'm right. But honestly, it was a very humble upbringing, and really molded me into the person I am today, and kind of taught me the importance of sticking true to your values and having integrity and just going out there and being fearless and courageous. So, yeah.
How exciting was it for you to get the opportunity to compete at the number one public institution in the world, based on what your family had been through? What was your family's reaction to you getting this opportunity?
It just kind of, you know, proved the point of going out there and taking what you want, and you're not expecting things to be handed to you. It was really exciting, because throughout my entire volleyball career, I was always told, oh, you're too short. You you can't possibly compete in the Pac-12. Just settle for something that's more like your level of play. And those words are just like fuel to my fire. Basically, it's like when you say no, I say yes. it's in the genes. But yeah, getting this opportunity and getting the opportunity to also kind of build a program back up and being a part of that was much more appealing to me, because I could really leave my footprint on the program and make this program like better than when I first got here. And that's the goal. And I think we're on that track right now, which is really exciting.
Well, no question about it. You're on the right track. I mean, you're right there with some of the best in the country and certainly in this conference, which means you're amongst the best in the country. Three coaches, 3 years is tough, though, too. Yes. And so now it looks like you've got the stability. But what's it been like for you and your teammates to go through that transition? Now, Jennifer obviously has been with the program a long time, and she was the interim coach last year and did a terrific job. You guys surprised everybody last year with the performance that you guys have. But now taking the next step with Sam as the head coach.
I think it's really hard to put into words how difficult kind of transitioning from three coaches. I know for some seniors it was four coaches because Rich had left. So it's just a lot of struggle, a lot of adapting, a lot of uncertainty. And I think when there's uncertainty, it casts this whole shadow of doubt, and it just lingered, you know, the past couple seasons. And we couldn't shake it until the very end, but by then it was already too late. We weren't going to the tournament. And I don't know, Sam keeps saying, like, did any of you even think that this was possible to be where you are right now? And everyone is just like, no, you know? So it's like really surreal. Like, we're making history, like, already. We're already accomplishing goals that we've already accomplished, like, in previous seasons. And so every day it's just about, how can we set the bar even higher? How can we beat ourselves from the day before? How can we be one day better? And taking in that mindset into this season has been really like life-changing, I guess, not to be dramatic, but it's just changed our perspective so much. And I think we're a lot better at just being in the moment and playing the present point and just not being distracted by anything outside of our bubble.
How much have the struggles in the past enabled this team, particularly this last weekend against Colorado and Utah, 2-5 setters? How much of what you've gone through in the past has helped you get over that hurdle? You know, you look at the fifth set against Utah, and they're up by 3 late, and yet you guys persevered, and maybe it is stay in the moment. The next point's the most important point. Well, what about the past has helped you in the future?
In the past, I think we struggled with closing. You know, we'd get into the 20s and kind of just expect the other team to kind of get off the brakes. Does that make sense? Yeah. We'd expect the other team to just kind of roll over. And now we're kind of just playing all the way through. Every point, like point 24 is equal to point one. You know, it's a point is a point. It just matters like where it's happening in the game. So I think now we're generating a lot more confidence within our team. We have that confidence to kind of get into the 20s, get into, you know, the 10s when it's like in the fifth set. So we've done that a few times, and we're really comfortable being behind and also knowing that we can kind of claw our way back. It's not a position we want to be in a lot, but as we've seen these past few matches, we're really good at staying calm even when we're down and kind of bringing ourselves back into the game.
Yeah, I mean, some teams, when they get down, that they, well, let's wait until the next game. Mm-hmm. But it's been obvious that's not the case with this team, and that's one of the reasons for the huge success so far. You're leading the team in kills, but it's a pretty balanced attack. You've got, you know, your setting. You sometimes you run the 4-2, or you got two setters in the game, and you're the one player that does all the rotations. Most people, or a lot of people, are specialists, but you're in all of the rotations. What do you like about that?
I think I just really like having a lot of jobs to do. You know, like if I'm struggling in one category, I'm able to kind of just say, well, if I'm not going to be good at this right now, I can be really good at this. So I think that's really helped me become more of a consistent and balanced player. I also just kind of like being that like rock, you know, when everything around me is changing. Mm-hmm. I think it really helps, and I don't know. It's nice knowing that I can really rely on all my teammates around me. You know, the offense is really balanced. Like, I think we have some of the best middles in the country, honestly. And when they're on, they're extremely hard, nearly impossible to stop. Our pins, like, are just doing phenomenal. You know, everyone's kind of realizing if we don't take this moment right now and this chance that we have right now, like, we're going to lose the opportunity. So everyone's really playing, like, in the moment and freely and just being like, why not us? So, yeah.
I like that, why not us. That's a good – and you've got to play free and easy, because if you start thinking about things and overthink things, then that's when things can fall apart. All right, you mentioned – I didn't mention it, but you mentioned it – height. Okay. You're listed at
5'11". That's a lie.
Okay, so it's we're going to say shorter than that, but we won't necessarily give the exact height. But you remind me, in that regard, of Angie Pressey. Who was a great player here. Now, Angie Forsett married Justin Forsett, the football player, played in the NFL. I think they recently had a baby. She was 5'9", 5'10", as well, but a phenomenal leaper. But it's not all leaping as well. You have to have a game plan when you go up to hit the ball. You have to know what you want to do with it. What's been the key for you at your height being so successful on the outside?
I think the toughest thing is that I really like – you know, those highlight reel hits. I mean, we all do. They're cool, and it's really fun when, like, you know, a smaller outside does them. Like, the outside against Colorado, Justine Spann, she's, like, 5'8". She had a phenomenal night, and she had some, mm-hmm. you know, highlight swings and some also really smart swings, which was cool to see. And I think for, you know, the quote-unquote undersized attackers, it's really important to not go for those flashy swings, to stay away from low zone six, to really kind of chip the block, tool it, be crafty. I'm lucky because I also play beach, so yeah. A lot of the times when I'm in trouble, Sam just says, get beachy with it, you know? And so...
And what does that mean?
That just means, like, use the wrist, you know? Get crafty, make some shots that people are not going to be expecting, you know? And so, yeah, I think just kind of implementing my beach game into the indoor game has been really helpful. But also, I think that I just have a lot of support when I get out of system sets, especially from liberos or, you know, anyone else in the court. Sam's really good about telling the pins to just have a strong approach and hit high zone five. So it's what we're doing. And, you know, if you're swinging high, the motto is swing high till you die. So if you're swinging high till you die, like, you're not going to be in a lot of trouble. So, yeah.
You mentioned sand volleyball, beach volleyball, whatever you want to call it. And you've played both here. You were the number one team. Here at California, which is another program, folks, that's on the rise. They're doing a tremendous job. Get a chance to come out and watch them. They're going to have a new facility as well. So, I mean, it's an exciting sport. We see it often in the Olympic Games. That's when most people are most familiar with it. Which of the two or how are they different for you? Because in beach volleyball, there's only two of you.
Yeah.
But there's a lot more space.
Yes.
So that's the good news and the bad news. As an offensive player, there's a lot more space to hit into. As a defensive player, there's a lot of space you have to defend. Which came first? Which do you maybe prefer?
Man, I get that question so often, but which came first? Indoor came first, and beach just kind of picked up because, you know, I was like, oh, I'm playing so much indoor, like, and I'm young, so I might as well just pick up another sport, and like 24/7, I was just playing volleyball. I can't believe I'm not tired of it yet. But so beach came second, and I really fell in love with it, and I guess now I can't confidently say which one I prefer. You know, I definitely think that both sports kind of seep into the way I play the other, you know, so I can implement beach into indoor and a little bit of indoor into beach. But no, there's not really one that I prefer. I think I just get really excited whenever, like, indoor season's coming up. And then by the end of indoor season, I'm like, I'm really excited for beach season now. And it's like this endless cycle of just, like, I'm excited to play. But the one that I do see long term and just, like, in terms of my body is more beach volleyball, you know? Yeah.
Your beach partner for a long time plays across the bay down at Stanford, Catherine Plummer, right?
That's her name.
She's a pretty good player.
Yeah,
you guys represented the United States a couple opportunities, got medals in the international competition. What was it like for you to represent the United States in those competitions?
It's always like a humbling experience to just kind of get to say that you did represent USA. I know that I'm really like fortunate to like even have that experience and even have the opportunity to even try out to represent the USA, because I know that a lot of people would want to be, you know, in my shoes, in Catherine's shoes, like in all of our shoes, you know. So yeah, I think it's like really surreal being there, but also just kind of being able to talk about it after and having that memory, you know, in the back of my mind is really special. Like one day I'll, you know, tell my kids or, you know, and I'll always have that to hold. So, yeah.
What's your measured vertical jump?
I don't know.
Really?
I really don't know.
Whatever it takes to get it.
Whatever it takes. Maybe I should start wearing the little like vert belt while I play so that I can see, but I honestly don't know. And it's cool and it's interesting to see how high people jump, but at the end of the day, like, it doesn't matter. Like, if you're getting kills, you're getting kills. You're getting kills no matter what. I'll get a kill, like, jumping 1 inch. No, I won't, but yeah.
Can you dunk a volleyball in a basketball rim?
I don't think so, no. I don't know, no.
Okay, so that's something that is just not there right now. It's not something
right
that,
now.
Yeah.
I'll definitely work on it.
You'll work on it, though?
I'll work on it.
Well, it's kind of cool. For a lot of people, cool. It's the measuring standard for mm-hmm. verticality, which is amazing because you did go through an ACL when
yes.
you were in high school. And to do what you've been able to do, come back from that injury, is pretty remarkable. All right, let's talk about this week. You head back home down to Southern California. You got UCLA, USC this weekend. Last year, two great matches. Actually, they were both good matches against USC and UCLA. You beat the Bruins, though, down there, which is a big accomplishment. And this year, you will go in as the higher-ranked team than both of those, the higher, better record than both of those programs. But what is it like for you to go back home, friends and family, to play two really good programs?
It's always exciting. Like, there are just a lot of good vibes down in SoCal, and especially because majority of the team is from SoCal, it's really nice to just see family and kind of realize at the end of the day, like, it's not really about volleyball. It's just about, like, the people you're with and, you know, your friends and family.
But to get bragging rights.
To get bragging rights is awesome. I mean, we're going to make LA bear territory. That's what we always say on travel trips. But, yeah, it's really exciting. Going to have some friends come. My brother is going to bring his water polo team, and they're going to heckle everybody. So that'll be super exciting. Yeah.
Well, hopefully it'll be a great trip. Stay healthy. Keep things going. The Bears 17-1, tied for the lead in the conference with only one league loss as well, and head down to Southern California this week for two very, very big matches. Mima, we appreciate taking the time to be with us.
Thank you.
As we mentioned, stay healthy. Congratulations
being
named the National Player of the Week.
Thanks.
And keep it going.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
You betcha. All right, Mima and the club down south, and you'll be back home in a couple of weeks. So make sure you come out and watch them. This is a really, really fun team to watch and doing extremely well. Well, that ends the podcast for this week. It's brought to you by UC Berkeley Optometry. When it comes to your eyes, we know the score. Take a time out to visit your campus team at UC Berkeley Optometry, the preferred optometrist of Cal Athletics. Appreciate Justin Wilcox stopping by as well, joining us. Of course, the football team in Salt Lake City to take on the Utes will be on the air with a pregame show beginning at 6 o'clock Pacific time, the Bears against the Utes of Utah. That wraps it up for another podcast. As always, we appreciate you listening. And also, as always, go Bears!
This has been Bear in Mind, the official podcast of Cal Athletics, with your host, Todd McKim. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation.